Cavalry Gore here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we are zooming to the moon, thanks to oldfootballshirts.com. So then, in a move not unusual for the beginning of June, the fixtures are out, only they're the same ones that we already had, but we're just going to play anyway. The players are back out on the grass in full contact training, and we restart our campaign on the 20th of June with Arsenal popping down to the Amex, and then we travel to Leicester 3 days later for a 6 o'clock kickoff. Seems a bit odd to me. However, looking through the training gallery, there were a few faces there which we may have forgotten about, including the Argentinian wonder kid Alexis McAllister. However, whilst it's good to be talking about football again, there are other issues that are clouding the restart, all of which we will talk about in the show. But joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares. Andy Bass is here, and we have a raw virgin in the shape of Betty Firminger. Have I pronounced your surname right, Betty?
Firminger,
there we go. Yep. And welcome to the show, Betty. It's lovely to have you on.
So, Thank you.
As is the norm with our raw virgins, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your Albion supporting history?
Okay, my name's Betty Firminger. I moved to Sussex about 15 years ago from London. I'm from South East London, don't hate me. I wasn't an Albion fan before I came to Sussex. I was a Newcastle fan. That's too long a story. But I moved here, started going, and fell in love absolutely immediately because the Wythe Dean, how can you not fall in love there? It's an absolutely perfect place. I loved it. I was one of the very few people that absolutely loved it. I loved how cack and rubbish and everything it was, and everyone hated going there. And we had a fantastic time there. Been a fan ever since. Season ticket holder at the Amex for the last 6 years, I think. Got married recently at the Amex.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Diehard fan, as is my husband. We are both diehard fans.
But the thing is, that's the thing, and we've talked about it a lot on this show about the way that Wythe Dean was, and the fact that it kind of forced people to congregate and actually talk to people that you might have like been on nodding acquaintance at the Goldstone or away games or something, but all of a sudden when you're in such a in the areas where you could congregate in around the burger vans and stuff in the South Stand particularly, it was an area where, you know, I've met lots of lifelong friends, including present company.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
If only I'd have moved away from the queue, and you wouldn't have had your chips from someone else. I mean, this is the point that Betty's making. I mean, I kind of get what she's saying. Admittedly, I was kind of there first, and I think Andy was, you know, he didn't really sort of do the Goldstone and the Gillingham years, but there is, with retrospect now, but I suppose at the time, a certain misty-eyedness about Wythe Dean that kind of transcends almost description. I mean, it was a silly stadium. I mean, I love the word you use, and I think we're going to be okay with this on radio. It was cack. And, you know, the away win was miles away. Andy, I don't think even you came along until the second season, but, you know, there was something otherworldly about Wythe Dean, wasn't there?
Well, funny enough, Betty, you're not the only DFL on this show tonight. So,
funny Northerners.
I too wasn't a Brighton fan when I moved down to Sussex. But I had a similar experience. I didn't, the first season with Dean, it was pretty much sold out every week. So I couldn't, because it was like the really restricted capacity then. So I couldn't really get a ticket, and I was still sort of in the death throes of my breakup from my team up the road,
and that's not
that one.
That's West Ham.
Not that one.
Oh no.
But once I'd sort of threw my lot in with the Albion in the second season, I was buying tickets, single tickets for most games, and then ended up getting a half season ticket, and then the rest, as I say, is history. I started going, and the Albion started to win things. So, you know, I'm not saying it's a coincidence or not, but I expected that to happen every year, and it nearly did. So,
it's unlike you to take the credit for anything, Andy.
No, who knew? No, Betty. I mean, you're a lady of words. I mean, you've also, one of the things that you haven't mentioned in your Albion biographies is you've also written for the Albion Mag. So, we know you're a lady of words. So, if you can you kind of elucidate, try and enunciate to us what it was with Dean meant to you?
Apart from getting wet. Even when it was sunny, I got wet. I don't really understand that.
That's more than we want to know.
I think it was the first time I've been going to football for a long time. I went in the 70s, where I went and I didn't feel afraid. And that's quite huge. I used to go with my dad, who was a bit of a nutcase. And I felt safe with him, even though it was frightening. But this time I was going on my own or taking my children, and I felt safe. People were incredibly welcoming. Mm-hmm. And that was a very new experience for me, apart from when I used to go to Newcastle with my brother's wife, or now wife, when I was young. But I think they just loved us because, you know, we're a black family, and they just welcomed us in, and it was really lovely. But it is one of the few times where I felt completely welcomed and safe, and I came back the next, you know, next time I could get tickets, I didn't even think twice about it. And the fact that the place was falling down and it just didn't look like a football ground didn't matter.
That was seven stands. Seven.
Sorry?
Seven stands, count them.
Yeah. Yeah, you say it's falling down, but it was as good as it ever got. That was the moment it was built.
Yeah. So I it was the people, and I loved it, and the football was great. We were playing really good football then. It was exciting, and all, you know, moving out of London, which was a scary thing, it just all kind of coincided into a really good time in my life. So,
So which was your first game then, Betty?
Do you know what? I was trying to think of that earlier, and I cannot remember.
We're talking about 2005 here.
No, 2006 we moved down.
Okay.
And it would have been in the February, March. Okay. I'll have to have a look.
So you come down, and we immediately get relegated. Remember.
It was absolutely pouring with rain, and I didn't have the forethought to have the old carrier bag things that everybody wore, those Pac-A-Max. And that's probably why my son hates football to this day. Because we got absolutely...
Okay, pouring. quick straw poll then, everybody. Your favourite wet with Dean game?
Well, two. Go on, Andy, you go first, mate.
When we beat Millwall, I think we beat Millwall 4-0.
4-1 it was. Yeah. 4-1.
Absolutely. I mean, it was biblical, but we beat them, which is great.
Yeah.
And just so wet.
Yeah.
I mean, we went, and then we had quite a nice time with the basket makers afterwards. So
We did.
Is that the one where we've got pictures and we're all totally soaked, and I think I've got a Roy the Rovers shirt on, and it's...
I think it might have even been my birthday, actually, but
it might, yes, yeah, it might, yeah, there is photographic evidence afterwards.
In answer to your question, lady, two games stand out. One, I think, was in the first season. We played Rochdale at home. It was a Friday night in November, December. We went 2-0 down, 3-2 up, and lost 4-3. Gary Hart was the only player that turned up. Everyone else, I made the mistake of wearing jeans that night, and so, of course, you know, You cannot move in soaking wet jeans. The idea of soaking wet jeans is they're supposed to mould and dry to you, so you sit in front of the fire with them. You don't sit in a football stadium. The other one, of course, is the Swindon semi-final, in complete contrast to the first leg, where it was a glorious, hot, sunny day. So, Betty, I mean, it must have been a kind of a baptism of fire to you. So, do you remember the games where you got soaked?
Baptism of rain.
Yeah.
There was, well, I think it was that first game, and I'm gonna have to look at. I've got a feeling it was one of the Sheffields. It was definitely a northern team.
Right.
I'm gonna have to look it up. It was, to be honest, that was a wonderful game. We won 2-1, I think.
Okay.
But what I remember was it was raining as we were going. But as we got out the station, we walked and so on, I was dry. Then it rained the whole throughout the game. Mm-hmm. And then it didn't rain when I was going home. And I just thought, that is just the weirdest thing. But that happened quite a lot.
Yes, it did.
Or wherever we were, wherever we managed to get tickets, we would get wet there. So, I don't know. But I loved it.
Absolutely.
It's all part of it, isn't it?
Same question to you then, AD.
Well, I mean, there was a few. I mean, obviously, the Rochdale game was just crazy. Mm-hmm. There was a game against Derby. We won 1-0. I think it was Kerry scored the winner. Mm-hmm. And it was absolutely biblical weather there. And I remember going to the Preston Park Hotel afterwards with a mate. And we sat down. And basically, there was an 80-shaped imprint in the seat from where I just sat down. It was one of those games where I could jump in a swimming pool and actually be drier. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it was. You mentioned the Swindon playoff semi there. I mean, I remember being always seems to be in a pub, strangely. Who knew? but it was. I was in the station pub at Preston Park prior to that, and I remember it was a warm, balmy evening, wasn't it? And
it was warm, yeah.
And then we got. I was in. It was kind of like atmospheric conditions in terms of. You sense the storm was coming, and when it came, my God, did it come? Because I certainly wasn't dressed for rain, like you and
I don't think anyone
watched that on your jeans. But it was like, it just, and they had the TV coverage in the pub, and it was just they were just starting to do the prelims for it before we left to go, and it was like, and it started crackling, and they lost transmission, and they were thinking. They were saying, oh my God, we might have problems here. We've got an electrical storm coming and it was going to cause major problems. So anyway, we got to the game.
The only weather we didn't have it with, Dean, was a plague of locusts.
No, we had those and frogs and squirrels. Don't forget the squirrels.
Does anyone also remember, I think it was against Leicester, there was such a foggy game you could hardly see either goalpost.
Oh, that was the game where Leicester scored and they didn't celebrate until they announced the goal over the tunnel.
Yes. Yeah. So I get the feeling, Betty, that what you're saying... Well, I think what you're saying here, Betty, is your first Albion game around February 06, and then I think probably about 5-6 weeks later, we get relegated. Bass, on the other hand, turns up...
No, it's my fault.
Yeah, basically. we're not going to blame you, but in the same way that we're not going to give Bass the credit for when he turned up and we got promoted. So, you know, I'm going to say that Bobby's a moron more than Andy Bass.
Well, he might have had some little to do with it.
Yeah, well, another West Ham fan, so there you go.
Quite.
I also, when we bought our season ticket at the Amex was when we nearly went down before Chris came. And I was beginning to think I was a Jonah at that point. So, lucky things changed.
Mm. Okay, February 2006, Leicester at home, Watford at home. That was Chris Eagle's goal, I seem to remember. Preston 0-0. That was March 2006. Well, move along. But anyway, we're talking about fixtures. We've just seen that. The list has actually come out for the restart. Starts on the 20th of June. I mentioned in at the top of the show there that we start where we left off with Arsenal coming to the Amex. Mm. Arsenal do have a practice match before that. They go to Man City a few days before, so they'll have actually got their eye in. Whether that's an unfair advantage or not, I don't know. We'll see, but. I mean, how are we all feeling about this? We've said on the show before that people are still dying and football's not important. We're over 40,000 dead now, which is, that's 10,000 more but you can fit into the Amex. That's something to think about. Yeah. It's, how are we feeling about it?
Betty, do you want to go first on this one?
Well, I'm a little bit conflicted because I'm one of the whatever it is, 1.8 million people that have to shield. So I watch the numbers closely because all of my hospital appointments have stopped. My operation has been cancelled until the numbers get down. So the more people go out and do things, I'm watching those numbers. However, this has got nothing to do with that, has it? This has got to do with money and business and that talks. So it was going to go ahead no matter what. It looks like they're testing and they're doing all the things that they can do within reason to keep the boys safe. I personally feel that the season should have just been cancelled, null and void, but that's never going to happen. So we just have to go with it, I'm afraid. Watching football with no fans is dire. I follow the under-23s avidly, and when they go away, I watch it, and it's just a practice match. It's awful. But hey, they came. I remember at the beginning when they were talking about all the different rules. Turn your face away when tackling. That sort of thing. It just, when they talk about the integrity of the game, I can't believe you'd use that word in that sentence. There is no integrity right now. But we just have to go with it. I feel a bit sad about it, as I can't leave my house. I have to stay home and I'm watching all of this going on. It's one of those things. Money talks, I'm afraid. So I don't know what will happen if the numbers start rising, as people are predicting. Will that stop or will they just carry on? That will be interested to see what will happen then.
Sure. Okay. Andy?
Andy, did you go along with that?
Well, yeah, pretty much everything that I've been saying the last couple of weeks, it's just reinforced there. I agree with everything Betty said. That said, you know, what's done is done. They are going to do it. They are going to play these games. We will be able to watch them on TV. And in a weird way, I'm kind of looking forward to it just because it will be my team there and I might be a little bit more interested in it. Am I emotionally at this moment heavily invested in how well we do? I just view it as an additional distraction from what we're doing, from what's going on at the moment. There's so much going on in the world now. It's just crazy. I'm certainly not sweating over the results of the matches just yet, but I will watch it as a form of entertainment. I don't think I'll be watching it the same way that it would be if it was actually proper football and we weren't where we are. But I think they've decided to go ahead with it, and I'll watch it, and it'll hopefully entertain me. And if it doesn't, then that's it. I'll watch it and try and get involved in it. I basically feel the same way as Betty. I think, I found the whole thing rather distasteful. Mm. I watched a couple of things with that the Albion have been putting out. It was a nice interview with Glenn Murray, and you're seeing the footage of the players. The players seem happy enough, and it was quite nice to see a few smiles on their faces as they're sort of running.
And long hair.
Mistakenly tried to cut it themselves, not looking at you, Adam Webster, but so a little bit of fun there, a little bit of levity and a little bit of a distraction. Well, and I'm viewing this now as a distraction model.
Well, as I said at the top of the show, I mean, the guys are back out on the blowout grass. It is now full contact training. And as we've already just said, there's clearly no contact with barbers still. I was going through. I went through the training gallery today, and it was amazing how many players I didn't actually recognise. I mean, so much. What's happened to him?
What has happened? I've seen the pictures. What's happened to him?
He's got a lot of hair.
he's, It's he's looking quite.
You said it were a team of beyond ball.
It looks like he's been getting orders from Piglets as well.
I'll tell you what, mate. For everyone that's been on lockdown, I challenge anyone to say that they haven't actually sort of like, you know, maybe had to, you know, open up their belt notch one by one or something like that. Yeah.
I'll take that running again, honest of you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I bake quite a lot to distract myself. And of course, you have to eat those items.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'm 200 yards around the corner from Piglet's pantry. So.
Oh, God.
this certainly explains a lot, Al.
Yeah, it does. No, but in answer to are we ready, listen, the point is no one had actually foreseen what was going to happen when you've got something on such a global level that you can't even sort of, you know, go to the next country and get your ideas from them, you know, because what works for one country doesn't necessarily work for another. And the point is that to actually what I feel is the best of the worst, in as much as you're forcing through, and I'm just playing devil's advocate, it's not a case of whether I agree with it or not. You're forcing through the end of the season. It's almost like you're just trying to ram it down the plug hole as quickly as possible, just in case the lawyers get hold of it. And if the lawyers get hold of this, this will go on for years and years and years. And you look at, I mean, Andy, you're a fan of the American sports. You know how much lawyers get involved in this, and you know much how much, once they get their claws into it, they can actually sort of destroy a club or a team or even a season. So I think that this is the least worst option. I still fundamentally disagree with what's going on account of the fact that the science hasn't changed. The numbers are still appalling. The curves that we're talking about are still appallingly way too high. And so every mitigation into the player's health is being put in place for the sake of not letting the lawyers win. It's a tragic set of circumstances under which we're operating. I can understand why they're doing it.
The only thing I could say is that, you know, maybe it will surprise us. Maybe we will surprise ourselves when we watch it. And we may, against our expectations, enjoy it and actually become gripped. I think once it kicks off, the narrative will change because then we will be talking about actual stuff and maybe trying to sort of just ignore what's going on outside our doors just for a few minutes. It's difficult to really know how you're going to react to it. So
I'm kind of
at peace with the fact that they've decided to do it, and and yeah, and then, you know, I'll watch it, you know, and hopefully.
I've got to say, guns ahead with AD's question. Do you agree with it?
No, I mean, no, I don't. I think they should have cancelled it pretty much immediately, and I think they should have been planning for next season, because I think you can start the competition properly next season. I think you're right. I think they're just rushing it to fulfil a contractual obligation and just get it out of the way without really worrying about, they're certainly not worrying about the integrity of the competition. No.
As Marcus keeps saying, bread and circus.
It's just trying to sort of get it over and done with, which that's not what sport is about. That's not about competition. It's certainly not about the experiences of people's lives at the moment. But it is what it is. For that really awful phrase, but it is what it is, and they're going to do. You know, they're going to do it. You know, me not watching it or whatever isn't going
to
make any
difference. Oh, it's futile arguing against it now. They're going ahead of it. It's not as though anyone's going to go to a stadium.
I think we've wasted valuable time in preparing for next season.
Indeed. Yeah, totally agree.
No one's going to go out.
I think they're going to get this over, and they're going to carry on. They're going to have a month's break and come straight back.
What if the second wave is back? I mean, you know, we're not. I saw something wonderful on Twitter. A journalist put Britain has managed to miss out on the second wave because the first wave is still going. That is exactly where we are. We shall see. We don't know when the next season will start.
It might be forced upon us. I mean, France and the Netherlands have already cancelled their season. So if we have that spike, then I think that we all know the writing's on the wall. And you know, let the lawyers, you know, sort of scrap over these pieces. That's when we know how much integrity every given football club has. I mean, if we're going to talk about integrity, I've been sort of dealing with the Football Sports Association this week. They're getting their opinions on various things ahead of meeting the Premier League next week. And one of the things that's come about is obviously because the games are going to be played behind closed doors, or at the very least, fans will not be allowed to be admitted to any stadia. What's going to happen now? If you've actually bought a ticket, whether in form of an individual ticket or a season ticket, and that game, you're not allowed to therefore enter. The legal status is, the default status is, you're entitled to your money back. Now, every single club has made that offer, including the Albion. The only one that hasn't, there's two that haven't, Sheffield United, but they say they're going to do something about it. And the club who are not going to do anything about it or have nothing to do with it is your old lot, Betty, Newcastle United. Now we've touched on this before, but I'd be interested in your opinions as to how you think the club has done in terms of keeping fans involved and keeping and making the offers that they have had regarding season tickets, Betty.
I think it was I've agreed with what they've done. I thought they were a bit slow though on the uptake because I did email them a couple of times. Because not everybody is in the situation where they could just let that money go, for example, especially if you've been furloughed or some people have lost their jobs. So I think it's interesting. They said they're going to take it off the money for next season when we don't even know if next season's going to happen. But they did say that they will, as soon as Premier League make their decision, they'll let us know what they're going to do about that. I like that they've been keeping everybody involved with, decisions and the interviews and all that. That's been good. That's as much as they can do. I did the quiz with Sidwell a couple of weeks ago, and you know that's okay. But it, as you said, Alan, it's these distractions that have kind of helped. People should just get their money back because what we're paying for is to go to the stadium and that should be the end of it.
Andy, at the very least, have the offer to have their money back. I mean, some people have been offered to have the Albion as one campaign or put it off. Remind me, is our season ticket money, it's not still being taken, is it?
Yes, it is.
Yes, but it has been reduced.
No, it hasn't.
It'll be reduced from this month when it goes out. This month,
the next ones go out, but this month was a full price, which I was surprised at, and then someone did say
full price with the increase. I did notice.
They made a mistake, and they said that, it was basically they're going to start making the deductions for it because they've told me what my new amount is going to be. But
how do you feel the club's been talking about, Andy, how do you feel the club's been in terms of information and I mean, you know, Betty's talking about doing the quiz and things like that, but how do you feel the club's been in terms of offering up information and the nature of the refunds?
I think they've been fine. They basically said, right, we'll give you pro rata the money back, and it's not an insubstantial sum, the discount that I'm going to receive. So I'm happy with that. Obviously, we don't know about next season, but they will make that decision when more information is available. And you know, they've given people the option to either donate their money to the club or to the Albion as one fund. They do what the Albion do. They do things more or less in the right way. I mean, it was absolutely fine. I'm taking the the discount, which requires no further action on my part, which is also the correct way to do it. You don't have to opt out. And I think, you know, I think the club have done well. They, you know, you get the weekly emails. They've tried to do things. I mean, you know, it's
we've been on the front foot throughout all of this.
But they're doing a good. I think they're doing you know, a decent job, as they always do.
Okay, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. The show is, as ever, brought to you in association with the fabulous oldfootballshirts.com. And Phil has given us an interesting shirt of the week for you this week. You know, we're doing this all on Zoom, so I've actually sent you a picture of the shirt to actually look at this time, rather than me holding this up, which I do have here. Here we go.
There we go. We've all got it. So you've got this ridiculous. I should take a screenshot here of everyone showing their football shirts to the camera. So that's how silly it's got here. Right.
So okay, what do we make of it?
Betty, can you describe this shirt to us?
Well, it's a glorious gold and black with black chevrons. Would you call that all going across? It has a badge which I can't tell, a red and black stripes with a green border. It's glorious. I love these kind of shirts.
Do you? These 80s,
I do.
80s, 90s type shirts, the real sort.
I do, when other teams wear them, yes.
I was about to say, because the two teams you've supported have never had it. Actually, the Albion really can't complain about having anything quite so grim. But, I mean, because when I look at this shirt, you'll say this, the yellow / gold with the black chevrons. And the first thing that springs to mind is kind of the Arsenal shirt.
Arsenal, yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
It's the Arsenal bruised banana.
Yeah, because the badge is wrong. But you like those really noisy 80s, 90s shirts, do you bet?
Yeah, because it says from a certain time. You're going to prove me wrong now, but it says from a particular time, and most probably that was the time I started falling in love with football.
Fair enough.
You know, the bad era.
Yes.
Well, all kinds of fashion.
You see, I mean, those shirts as well, they were one size fits all. The player issue shirts, they were always really baggy. So I remember, this was fast forward a bit from there, but Leon Knight at Crawley a few years ago.
Oh, God.
We had... It was the yellow skin shirt with the black seagull on it, and like, we only had extra large or extra large, which is fine on Guy Butters, but Leon Knight was wearing exactly the same size shirt.
Same thing about the Palookaville shirt, which was that skin tight stuff that basically made Guy Butters look like a basted turkey. So. You know, it swings and roundabouts. Andy, do you want to have a swipe at this? Because I have absolutely no idea. I mean, the only other team I can think of is Borussia Dortmund, but again, the badge is wrong. So, Andy, do you want to have a go at this?
I've got two thoughts.
Really? How many is that?
I was thinking maybe it's an Italian team. Maybe like a third shirt for Milan or maybe Genoa. And then I thought, given that it is basically just like a rip-off of that Arsenal shirt, could it possibly be... Isn't there another team called Arsenal?
There is an Arsenal Argentina in Argentina.
Yeah. Is it a tribute shirt?
No, it's not.
Going to guess 1993.
Well, it's actually... I mean, we should note that it's actually made by Lotto, the shirt, which is probably why you're thinking it's Italian. But
yeah.
No, you're wrong. It's not. This is what Phil has to say about this one. And it says, here is my third shirt collected during lockdown. And your shirt of the week this week is 2014.
What?
Away shirt of Duli Penegran Muda Makota Football Club, or DPMMFC.
And that would be my third guess.
Yeah.
the team are from the Bandar Seri Begawan in Brunei, but they currently play
Brunei.
Brunei.
Yeah. And they currently play
the best he's ever got.
And they currently play in the Singapore Premier League. They've had an interesting history. Originally they played in the Brunei Premier League, and then in 2005 they moved to play in the Malaysian Premier League in and gained promotion to the Malaysian Super League the following year. In 2009, they resigned from the Malaysian Super League and joined the Singaporean Premier League. And they got banned by FIFA from international sport due to the Brunei government's interference in the Brunei FA. And they were finally readmitted into the S League with this year in 2014. And they went on to win the league in 2015. The design is a clear mimic of the famous bruised banana shirt worn by Arsenal in the 91-92 season. GPNN have had a number of kits over the years that pay homage to other iconic kits. And this one is a little more of a copy of the Gunners kit. But that said, it was far cheaper than the Adidas Classic. I can't even say Clackerlin. I've been drinking. It was far cheaper than the Adidas Classic, which you can currently find selling for £400 or more. A UK link, their current manager is Adrian Pennock. He played most of his career at Gillingham between 96 and 2003, but also spent time at plucky little Bournemouth and started his career at Norwich. Current DPMN defender is Charlie Clough, who had an illustrious non-league career spanning 10 years playing for 10 different English and Welsh non-league sides. And yes, he did find an Albion link.
No, he didn't. This is, okay, right.
Best, no, this is true.
When he says this, I want truth or bluff. Come on, go for it, AD.
Your Albion link for DPMN is that a former loanee from Ipswich, George O'Callaghan, turned out 14 times for the Albion in 2007. He played for DPMN in two short spells in 2002 and again in 2011.
Okay, Betty, true or bluff with that last one?
I'm going to say that's true.
You are correct. It is true.
Yeah.
No, I'm not having that. I just love the way the fact that, you know, we're supposed to guess, you know, some major footballing hotspot country. I mean, it's usually Mexico that Phil gives us. And we get Brunei. I mean, how in the name
not of...
Not even playing in Brunei, just hawking themselves across Southeast Asia. How in the name of John Craven's testicle are we supposed to get that? Brunei! I didn't even know they played football.
Okay, anyway, we've got to move on. We've got just one small thing on the notice board this week. You may have already seen it, but last week I did a very special interview with an Albion hero, a bit of a legend, Mark Lawrenson, which is currently up on the Albion Roy YouTube channel. And go there, watch the full interview. You may have heard the tribute that he gave to.
I love the fact he thought he stole his house, didn't he?
Yeah.
There's your headline. This is of all things that Mark Lawrenson could ever say about Michael Robinson. He stole my house.
Yeah, he did. He did say that. But that's over on our YouTube channel. There's plenty of other stuff there as well. Interviews with Gary Dicker, Peter Ward. Paul Hamlin, Phil, Marcus, and he's still yet to do it. He's on the list. But it's good fun, and I hope you've enjoyed it. And go and give it a listen, comment, like, share, and we'd really appreciate it. So anyway, moving on. We're living in kind of unprecedented times at the moment, and strange things are going on in the world. And
I mean, the point that we've got here in this, we've had, we're not exactly sort of campaigners on this show, but we've had people from Football Be Homophobia, we've had people from domestic violence units on this show, and football is a reflection of society as a whole. It doesn't live in a vacuum. I mean, even when Margaret Thatcher tried to blame football for all of society's ills, the football came back and said, look, this is society's problem, not football's problem. And one cannot help but be sort of like absolutely astonished and startled as to world events. And it highlights and shines another light back on not just society generally, US and UK, and I suppose Western European society, but on football as well. And make no mistake that there is the whole issue of racism in football. Now, Betty, if you can actually sort of start with us and let us know sort of you mentioned it earlier about you know, where you've come from, but your ethnic background and your experience in watching football, both in Newcastle and Brighton, and how you believe that you've been treated.
I grew up in Southeast London. I was born in Germany. My parents were in the military. I was born out there. Came here when I was three. My father's American. My mother's Nigerian. So I'm black. Lived here for 48 years.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was a avid football fan. And took me in the 70s, which was, this country was a very, very different place. And for your younger listeners, I really want to stress that this country was very different then. And in terms of racism was out there, and it was just normal to be called names. You would be called those names as your name. My mother was a nurse in the military, and then obviously on Civvy Street, and she would be called Coon, whatever, instead of her actual name. It was just the norm. It wasn't.
It was on mainstream TV.
Had to accept it. That was the time. The TV shows that were on, comedians would make black jokes, as it was just normal.
Sure.
And that's what we lived with. I would go to football with my father. We never went to one ground in particular. We would just go whoever was at home. And where I lived in South London, we could go to quite a few grounds. And it was scary. I'm not going to lie to you, but my dad, coming out of the military, was a man that could take care of himself. And so we would go to football because none of my other brothers and sisters were interested at all. And I would go, and I loved the game, but the before and after was always very scary. When I hit teen years, I stopped going because I was going out with my friends and so on and so forth. But it never, ever occurred to me to go on my own. I wouldn't have because it was terrifying in the 80s. I just wouldn't have gone on my own. Very different in the 2000s. I started going again, and I would go with friends. I went to a lot of international matches at that time, and I noticed there was a difference, a massive, massive difference. When I started going here in Brighton and going with my husband, we used to go home and away. There was a big difference with going to the Amex and going away. And that's just started happening in the last couple of years. At the Amex, I've never experienced anything. I've never felt threatened or anything other than welcomed, always, right from the WIV Dean to the Amex, never felt anything other than you are welcome here. But in the last couple of years, I have noticed a difference. People would stop and look. I'd get a couple of comments, or I would, you know, just a few little things which hadn't happened before. And I didn't know if that was because I was going away more and I was noticing it more. I just wasn't sure. But there is a slight difference. But one of the things that people have talked a lot about was when players are called names, monkey chants and all that, so on and so forth. As a person in the crowd, when you hear that, that immediate feeling of taking me back to 1976 comes back straight away of, am I going to be all right? And what I, obviously, back in those days, nobody was thrown out, nothing like that ever happened. But that feeling comes back to me, comes back 40 years. And that was quite a surprise to me. Even when I watch it on TV, and I always think of the people in the crowd. How do they feel? All the attention is on the players. But the people in the crowd, whom it, the person may be behind them, in front of them, next to them, they must feel threatened, and no one checks to see if they're okay. I have noticed a lot more, as I say, in the last couple of years. Don't know what that's to do with. Is it to do with Brexit, where people feel more comfortable to say these things out loud? I'm not sure. I've had a couple of incidents on the street where people have said things to me, and that's been a bit of a shock, because that hasn't happened for a long time. But people feel, in this day and age of social media, where people just talk a lot and say whatever they want to say online, they're beginning to say it out. And that's, it's coming out in all these different ways.
So when you're hearing this, Betty, when you're hearing this, is this, do you feel that football is reflecting society, or do you feel that there is a difference when you're within the football, and I hate the phrase, football family, or do they mirror each other?
Yes, I feel football reflects society. I mean, what happens in football isn't separate to what's happening in society. The thing is, being at the Amex and going and sitting where I do, I'm protected, aren't I? And I'm surrounded by my football and family. Nobody, if they have those thoughts, are going to say those things in that area. And I feel very safe. But when I watch the international games and you hear, you know, the games, the Tottenham game, etc., and so on, that's what's happening in the world. I'm hearing that from my black friends, from my son, who's in the music industry and he lives in Brighton. These things are happening. People are saying things out loud a lot more. And that's just what's happening everywhere, isn't it? So I don't think it's definitely not a football problem. It's a society problem. It never really went away. It just was quietened because people knew they couldn't do that sort of thing. Now they're doing it much more vocally.
So why do you think they've got a voice all of a sudden? Because, I mean, it's clearly not acceptable. Well, it never has been acceptable.
Because the, I think the far right people, the racist people have a voice now. They have a very loud voice. They have a loud following. And people think it's okay because they have been given the platform. The Donald Trumps, the Katie, whatever her name
Hopkins.
Is.
Yeah, sorry, Hopkins. I had to repeat her name, sorry.
Farage, all these people, they have a platform, and people, in a way, think, well, it's okay, because these people, they have a million followers, they have 4 million followers, they're on TV, I can say these things. This man is the head of a political party. It's legitimate, it legitimizes it. Some of the rhetoric during the Brexit stuff was terrifying. It was nearly Enoch Powell-esque, some of the speeches that were being said. So people that might have felt a bit of angst for whatever reason in their lives just latch onto that and feel it's okay.
So given what's happened in America especially, And you know the nature of what's happening with the authorities and the brutality and the society with which authority actually puts its stamp onto society generally, and how it's actually struck a chord with everyone else here, and it then filters into, and we're back to that same point of filtering into all streams of society. Liverpool players take the knee. US sports stars take the knee. Leicester have done it as well. We're all offering forms of sympathy. But the conversation we had earlier, you're saying, yes, the support is one thing, but this isn't necessarily getting to the nub of the matter. Could you give us your thoughts as to what you think, where you think that we could be going with this?
Well, I think it's great that everybody's showing that support to that incident that happened last week. It's unfortunate that lots of people have died in similar circumstances, and two other people died last week as well in similar circumstances, but you know, that's by the by. Those incidents for us as UK resident citizens, those are unheard of. They're so far out of our realm. So for us it's rare. What happens to me on a daily basis is the subtle sort of racist comments, looks, being treated differently, not being served. That happens on a daily basis.
Can you give us a for instance?
I said to you earlier about the shop assistant thing, which I put in my Facebook comment. The shop assistant looking you in the eye and putting the money on the counter, making it very clear they don't want to touch your hand. That is a regular. And the reason I put that in my Facebook comment, because it was said on Coronation Street, as a black character was talking to a racist and talking about the things that happens to him. And I said, oh, a black person must have wrote that, because only we pick up on those things. And it is those kind of things that didn't make you feel belittled and less than human. Like, I don't want to touch you because I don't know where you've been, that sort of thing. And I'm talking about pre-corona times, not now, because obviously sure. We're not doing that now. Yeah. But not being served at a bar. You're standing at a bar and they deliberately don't serve you, even though you've been standing there for ages. People pushing in front of you in the queue. People saying things to you like, or I have had said to me on several occasions, oh, you went to university, or I didn't realize that black people like doing that sort of thing. Those kind of silly little comments that belittle you, that happens on a daily basis to every single black person all the time. Oh. And that it kind of, you don't get angry about it because you would be angry all the time. So you let those go. And even to the point, as my son said to me today, even being stopped by the police constantly, you just let it go because it's all the time.
So is this, I mean, we've had conversations like this before on the show with various people, and we've come to the conclusion that it's an education thing, that people need to be educated. Everyone should know that everyone should be equal, treated exactly the same, no matter what color, creed, race, or whatever. It's just that.
But no one is born racist, Daisy. That's the point.
No, exactly.
It's a learned societal thing. That no one is. No one's born racist. We pick it up along the way, and I'm sure that each of us, as much as we might be non-racist or anti-racist, here we are, three guys talking with Betty. You know, our average age is about 50. Here and there, we've had these experiences where we are learning on the way, and things we have to unlearn. Things like that. Your point about education is one thing, but maybe, I don't know, maybe am I sort of like slapping AD down too easily, Betty? Is it an education thing, or should it actually be an intrinsic part of the unwritten rules of society, that, you know, racism is an anathema to human, you know, to Western society?
I don't think there is one answer. I think education has a part to play. I think people's experiences, I mean, I live in a part of England where there aren't many black people. I live in a little village, actually. Mm. And I've had several people say to me that I can see on their face, they're pleasantly surprised that I'm quite nice to talk to, which makes me think, well, what did you think? Mm. But I don't blame them because I live in a tiny village. They don't know anybody else. So I don't think it's one thing. I think people need to be open-minded, but I feel that before we can all start looking at each other as a fellow human being and treating someone as a fellow human being, not you looking at me as a black woman or as a black person, but just as a human being, we're not going to move forward with this whole thing. People can identify and feel outraged by a man being murdered by a policeman with his knee on his neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. But you can't feel outraged when I say someone won't touch my hand in a shop or they won't serve me. Those are the things that happen on a daily basis. And with that happening, it grows to a man being knelt on by a policeman, another woman being shot by mistake, etc. It's just that belittling another human being, not treating someone as a fellow human being. You have the same rights as me. I know that you, Alan, and my husband, he was the same, would not have put up with the things that I put up with on a daily basis. But I know that if I dealt with it that the way my husband would deal with it, I most probably wouldn't have a job. I wouldn't have a very happy life. I'd be very angry all the time. So I deal with it in what I call grace and dignity and move on and pick my battles. But that, again, isn't the right thing either, because those people aren't learning from the fact that the things
And from a mental health point of view, it can't be good for anyone to have to brush that under the coat, under the carpet, and you know, it just lived with this silent horror, basically.
Yeah, well, I'm a true believer in be the change you want to see. So I feel that in the way that I decide to live my life, that has an effect on people, and that might change how that they view people, and they might treat a black person differently next time. As I say, people sometimes I can see on their face, they're surprised when they talk to me, and we have a chat in the park, walking the dog or whatever, and that might change their view. And that might be the experience they needed, that piece, little bit of education that they needed to change their behavior.
Mm. Did you really want to set yourself up as an ambassador for all of, you know, African sort of culture then, in that case? I mean, that's not really what you're here for. You're here to live your own life, and yet here you are.
Yes, but I'm an educator. That is my job. And there are times when I have to do this as part of my job. I work in a school where I'm the only black person, adult or child. And I get pulled into these conversations, especially when we're raising money for African charities. I get pulled into these things. And I know people don't mean it, but I'm sitting in assembly and I'm like, I know they're going to call me out of it.
You're black. What do you think?
I'll tell you what, Betty, next time we see you in the pub, it's definitely hours round. And
absolutely.
Because I won't get served.
And we're going to have to leave it there because we have to run out of time, unfortunately.
Betty, it's been brilliant having you on the show. Betty, will you come back onto the Albion Raw, please?
And we won't absolutely talk. We promise not to talk about this again unless we have to. But
but thank you for your thoughts and insights.
You've been listening to the Albion Raw with me, Ady Packer, with Alan Wares, with Andy Bass, and of course with Betty Firminger. And we'll be back soon, and we'll be talking about football. We'll see you again in the Albion Raw. Very soon.
Does anyone know the way to hear someone say?